So as soon as we, there's the tea. Good. As soon as we get our tea, I'm going to talk a little bit this morning about equanimity and diversity. It sounds like a contradiction, as often things in Zen do. There's in some Zen circles, there's the saying, only go straight. Well, what is that referring to? What does that really mean, go straight? So when you are guided by your original nature, your true face, then everything is illuminated and nothing is in shadows. Otherwise, the discerning mind makes things out of the diversity. We have our judgments, our concerns, we have our scales that we weigh things on. And that is where the confusion and the difficulty and finding the right path for what's right in front of us is. So I wanted to talk about it from the point of view of our Buddhist practice. And there's a lot of diversity in Buddhism. There's a lot of diversity in the various schools and the different approaches and the different perceptions or translations, even. So I'm going to refer to the Platform Sutra by Huneng this morning, and I'm going to be looking at the text that is translated by Red Pine. What's interesting about this translation is that he refers to a lot of the other translations over time of this text, this famous text from the Sixth Patriarch. So it's interesting. He talks about things that were left out, and things that were added, and the way the text has been edited over time. And this is true throughout Buddhist history. So originally, Buddhist teachings were all memorized. And then they began to be written down and in Pali and other languages in Sanskrit. And of course, everything ended up traveling, ended up in China, Bodhidharma and the rest. There's lots of places you can get caught up in the text and the description and think you're reading something that is a direct translation, but it's really just an interpretation of maybe even a partial text that was never really totally understood. In other words, you had to be there. So how can you be there? By only going straight. Your original face is your guide to everything. Nothing gets confusing when you're guided by your original nature. So I'm going to read this section. It's section 40 in this particular translation. During this time, there were competing schools. So there was a Master Xin Xiu, who was a northern school, and Huneng, who was a southern school. I'll just read this section and you'll get the gist of it. Master Xin Xiu often heard people say that Huneng's teachings was fast and pointed straight to the path. So Xin Xiu told his disciple, Ching Cha Ying, you're intelligent and perceptive. Go to Huning's place on Dao Chust Mountain for me and pay your respects. But just listen. Don't say I sent you. When you hear something important, make a note of it and come back and tell me. We'll see whose understanding is fast or slow, mine or Huning's. And come back right away. Don't leave me hanging. So Chi Chung Ing gladly accepted the mission and left. And within half a month, he reached Jiaochu Mountain and met Master Huning. So just a little controversy here about the translation. In this translation, it says it took him half a month. But when you look at the actual maps in China and you recognize how long it took to get from one place to another, it was more likely more like 2 or 3 months. So, you know, there's a lot of interpretation of things happening when you read these things, and you have to get to the core of what is it that's being said here rather than getting caught up in the details. So after he paid his respects, he just listened and didn't say where he was from. But as soon as Chi Chong Ying heard the master teach, he understood and he grasped his original mind. He stood up and bowed and said, "Master, your disciple has come from Yuhan Temple at Xin Hu's place. I didn't experience any realization, but as soon as I heard the master speak, I grasped my original mind. I hope the master will be compassionate enough to instruct me." Master Huning said, "If that's where you're from, you must be a spy." Chu Hyung said, "I'm not a spy," the sixth patriarch said, "and why not?" Huang said, "Before I spoke, I was, but now that I have spoken, I am not." The sixth patriarch said, "It's the same with affliction is to enlightenment. It's the same with affliction is to enlightenment." So this really, all this business about direct and indirect, it's simply the teacher's ability to teach and the student's ability to learn. If one of the two isn't up to the task, no teaching or learning can take place. Of course, students like to elevate their teacher and as well as themselves. And once the teacher is gone, the teaching is often enshrined and forced into the confines of whatever labels are current among the surviving students. But Huning's teaching was no teaching. So how could it be fast or slow, direct or indirect? So when the sixth patriarch said, "It's the same with affliction is enlightenment," Huning is quoting something that appears in a number of Mahayana texts. "The mind that is afflicted and the mind that is enlightened are the same mind, or our original mind, the mind we can't leave and the mind that can't leave us. As long as we are unaware of the real mind, we are afflicted. And as soon as we are aware of our real mind, we are enlightened and no longer afflicted. The mind doesn't change. The only thing that changes is our awareness of the true nature of our affliction, which is no different from the true nature of enlightenment." That, to me, describes what I mean by equanimity in diversity. So when you're guided by your true mind, then whatever's happening is happening without the seesaw effect of, is it right? Is it wrong? Should I take this path or should I take that path? It's being guided by your intuitive understanding of how things actually are, and you just do it. You just go straight. All of this talk about one Zen versus another Zen, or one Mahayana versus Theravada, or all these different aspects of Buddhism, don't get caught up in all that language and all that hearsay and all that uplifting views of one's teacher and recognize if there's something there for you to get, just get it and move on. Don't get caught up in having to belong to a particular system so that you become enshrined, engulfed in a deluded view of self and other. The whole idea of all of this is to wake up. So enjoy all the diversity. Look at it, appreciate it, get something from it, learn from it, but don't become caught up in it. Only go straight. Don't make something out of it. Be present, have an aha moment when you do, when you read a text or a poem or the sun goes down or you hear a bird singing, whatever it is, touches you in such a way that equanimity comes forward, then appreciate it. Be compassionate towards yourself and the experience and life and move on. You know, there's so many places that the diversity is constantly trying to grab our attention. That's why we sit and that's why we wake up, so that our attention is only go straight, be awake to what's really happening, so that you can be like bodhisattva and contribute to life rather than be caught up and deluded and confused and struggling and suffering. What can I say? So anyway, if you're looking for something to read, Kuning's Platform Sutra is another one. Thank you for making the tea.
No, it's still too hot for me.
So what do you think?
I like it. I feel like it has a lot of parables to real life too, you know, not just Buddhism and
yes,
but right, like I said last week, the Occam's razor, like usually it's the simplest thing. Get what you need out of it, find the simplest path or the simplest way forward.
Yeah. Don't get stuck in the brambles and the bushes.
Yeah. We like to get stuck though, I think.
We do like to get stuck, and that's an important point, because that's habit energy. Mm-hmm. That's based on our karmic idea of self, based on this past experience. We made these judgments. I'm this kind of person, or I'm this, or I'm that. And also things that we're avoiding.
Yeah.
Because avoidance is another way of creating the space to say, you know, this or that.
Right.
So when we're avoiding whatever it is that's bothering us and not dealing with it, not being honest with ourselves about it, then how can we be honest with what's going on around us? How can we see our true nature for not being honest with those things that we're struggling with?
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated, but just keep sitting, you know. I mean, if there's one thing that an old teacher that had a center here in Sarasota, he would say, just sit more. You know, he never had an answer for anything, but just sit more. Yes, yes, that's not wrong. And we have been sitting more, and I've been feeling the benefit of two sittings every time we get together. I hope you have too. And
walking.
And the walking.
Yeah.
Yep. That also. Yeah.
So I've been doing some work recently on this idea of in Zen, of course, we intuitively take a step when we know when we intuit what it is we should do, is the idea of it. But there are certain circumstances where it's like I find myself very often analyzing things, you know, 3 ways to Sunday. And so I was wondering, is there some easy way somewhere in between that you can just use as sort of a, what are the rules, what are the ways of looking at things that you can just make a decision and move forward? And you know, with, you know, intuition sometimes, I thought I felt that, and then it's like, so yeah, there's some, a lot of good work out there in the tradition. I didn't realize a lot of ideas around it.
Yeah.
In the Western canon, there's Kant, apparently, mm-hmm. this idea of the categorical imperative. So you just look at it and say, well, what if everybody did that? Is that a good thing? Should I be doing that? What if everybody did that? And of course, it's like, no, that wouldn't work. And his example was actually vegetarianism. If everybody ate beef, then we would, as we are doing, we're having a hard time sustaining the planet because of it.
Yeah.
But it was also a useful way, a useful thing just to quickly make a move forward and know that, yeah, okay, I didn't have to spend a lot of time on that. I can now, yes, but take the right path. So that was a good one. Then there's also now I'm finding this stuff in the Japanese Buddhist tradition.
Yeah.
And Kaizen, and thinking mm-hmm. about things and improving. And so it's a good path. It's a good, been a good kind of an interesting week or so.
Yeah.
Thinking and researching.
Yeah, good.
And you say that because that's what, so my degree is in IT, but specifically on management side of things. And so mm-hmm. I have tons of classes on the best way to analyze, the best way to come to a decision, mm-hmm. the best, mm-hmm. like, so it's funny you say that because it, you know, there are so many methods, but
yes,
so
I'd like to see it from a more
yeah, so the holistic view, of course, is the equanimity.
So
that's where the intuition comes in. Mm-hmm. But what you said about Kant is a great example. Mm-hmm. It's like, I used to belong to the Sufi Order of the West. Mm-hmm. The Sufi Order of the West, their main motto or mantra was toward the one. So when you look at all religions from their, and specifically that group, because that was a religious group in a sense, a mystical group, but looking at religions, if you look at toward the one, where are they all pointing toward the one? And where in their doctrine, where in what it is they're teaching, they pointing to the one. It's the same thing as if everyone did this. So, you know, it's that kind of question. So it's that open-ended without narrowing things down to putting them on a scale and based on your karmic understanding of how things are. So it's dropping all that, dropping your idea of self. You know, again, it comes back to this no self. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can understand no self the same way. No self is equanimity.
I had read somewhere this Christian theologian whose name's escaping me that said that Christians have to take the Bible as the inerrant word of God because that's the only thing that's constant throughout the ages and the only way for Christians in different times to essentially communicate with one another. And, you know, it occurred to me that you can just meet the text throughout the ages without necessarily taking it as gospel, so to speak.
That's correct. And that was exactly kind of my introduction tonight was about the different translations. And where things were omitted and things were added, and, you know, you had to be there because whoever's doing it is doing it with their own interest in mind. So you have to not let that influence you. So how do you do that? Yeah. Toward the one.
I think that's why I had such a hard time with Christian religion and stuff like that. Because I always just thought, well, why do I? So my grandma's Jewish. My grandpa was Catholic. We would go to Catholic mass and have to go into the confessional. I'm like, why? I don't understand this. Like, why can't I just like pray to God directly? That's why I like meditation. It's like I to just be part of it all at once without having to go through all these steps to achieve it. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that we're pointing at here in this discussion is that it's not about the text.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, it's the direct experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how do you have that and still gain something from all these various traditions and texts and philosophies and philosophers? How do you gain something from it that contributes to your life in such a way that you can use it? You know, it starts from, you already have it, all of it. That's where it starts from. You're not missing anything. So when you start from there, it looks different than grasping, looking for, needing to find meaning, et cetera, et cetera. It's trust in your original nature, wake up, and everything is exposed for what it is. That's really why we do what we do. It's, you know, we're not after a religious experience. We may have one, but that's not what we're doing here, you know? We're just finding all the equanimity and all the diversity of our lives.
Yeah, there is a subtle but significant shift from when you're searching for answers before, you just read this text or read that. This guy's got great ideas. And then now it's more, that's interesting. Oh, yeah, I can see, that fits in. That's like a piece of the jigsaw. Yeah.
Yes. Even your experiences, like when you're sitting in meditation, sometimes you can have really bizarre experiences. Like, for example, you can feel like your body's bigger than the room.
I literally had that happen today where I just, for a second, I was like, ooh, all right. And I had to open my eyes and like stretch out and like feel like, okay, nope, this is where I am.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's good to have that. Yeah. So, but again, you don't identify with it, you know, as something that's significant. You just see it, experience it. And if there's something there for you, accept it as a gift.
Yeah.
You know, that expansive feeling, if that's moving you in the direction of recognizing the equanimity of life, then accept it as a gift, but don't judge it as right or wrong, or yes, true or not true. It's like the gift isn't in the after effect. It's in the actual moment. So
it was really cool in the moment, but then afterwards I was like, all right, center, bring it back. Where am I? You know, where am I, right?
Yeah, so that's where the I comes in, you know. Yeah. It's like, I drank the tea. No, you know, tasting the tea happened before you decided what the tea tasted like. What a crazy world we're in right now. I mean, the climate is just so crazy. I mean, it's extreme heat in one place, floods in another.
So my nephews live in Montana where I'm going, but it's hotter than here.
Yeah.
They're gonna come here to cool down?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Germany's flooding away.
Yeah.
My coworker in Arizona said it's a very weird time for them because it's their monsoon season as well. So she's like, it gets up to 130 during the day, mm-hmm. and then at night the monsoons come.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, so we have this weird dynamic of literally burning during the day and then being like flooded out at night. And I'm like, I can't even imagine. She's like, so you can't, she's like, it's hard to go outside even.
Yeah. So equanimity and diversity. Sometimes that diversity is pretty extreme. It's another reason to sit like your hair is on fire. Matter of life and death. That's such a big one. You know, in this conversation about what we're discussing today, I mean, just think of all the different views we have of death. None of us know, right? But we have all this mythology around it. So much to sort out, you know, belief systems. How do we really think about it? So coming back to your original nature, and things being illuminated, then what does death look like? Not from the place of fear, you know, confusion and not understanding, but from that place of equanimity. What is life and death then? How does it look? How does it look from stillness? You know, what we were talking about just a moment ago about sitting and having these experiences that are sort of, you know, out of body and what have you. And just as in the course of sitting, you know, sometimes your mind is just, you're dealing with this monkey mind. But sometimes you kind of lose touch of having a body. All of that, you know, how does that play into this whole thing? And then we're so afraid of dealing with death that in our culture in particular, we avoid, you know, we put it away from us. So usually when someone dies, they're in a hospital or they're somewhere away. They're not next to us. They're not in our living room with us. You know, and there's not that intimacy always. Sometimes there is, but not always. And there's so much social stigma around dying. And it becomes kind of unnatural. But how do we experience, you know, beyond the grief and the loss to something beyond that?
That saying, they say you should always have a physicist speak at your funeral, because in physics, there's the law of conservation of matter and energy. Nothing can be created or destroyed. So a physicist would remind you that your mother really is still here. Her atoms are now, you know, the iron that's in her bones is now the iron that's in an apple pie, or the, all of that. The sunlight that bounced off her eyeball is now shooting off into space to bounce off of another photon. So, yeah, she's still here.
Well, just to give you another version of the physicist, in Zen Buddhist rituals that usually come, I think it's 39 or 49 days after a person has passed, a Zen monk will give a lecture or talk, that is exactly what he will say. The physicist identifies with it as modern science. That's fine. But, you know, that's just his identification. So getting back to the equanimity and being able to see things, you know, so we have all these texts and these experts and all these places that we can find information, but just remember that it was never gone. So that understanding is always there in original nature. It doesn't take you having to go to college or university, become a physicist to understand that.
Yeah.
But you can if you want. I mean, that's great. You're doing service in the world in that way. Wonderful. We all have our different paths. That's fine. But again, it's just the diversity part of it. I recommend you go into a bookstore sometime and not have, go in with no thought, no intention, no desire, and see what comes up in your mind and see where it leads you in terms of which aisle you walk down. Where do you stop? Where do you look? And what you discover about yourself as you're looking without having gone there to find a particular book, but just go there with no intention to find a particular book or learn something in a particular way. Just go to browse. It's like going to the library open-mindedly without any intention. You could get lost. That's one thing that could happen. You can get confused. Or, you know, if you're allowing that equanimity part of you to guide you through it, maybe you'll find something useful that you didn't know you needed.
For the bigger challenge, saying no to the things that you don't need that you think you do.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yes. Things that you don't need. Yes.
See what you type into the search bar at Amazon.
Same thing. So I caught myself lately doing, I have two fly rods. I don't need any more fly rods. But lately, I've been searching fly rods. Desire nature. Isn't it wonderful? So, yeah. You know, part of enjoying our life is laughing at ourselves, I think. Well, it is summertime. Stay cool. Are we done? Okay. Thank you.